What's up, New Numa fam? The time has finally come for me to step up my game on YouTube. So in January 2023, I will begin focusing most of my attention on building not one, but two YouTube channels. One will focus on just audio and the other on live videos. So do me a favor, take out your phone, go to your YouTube app, and subscribe to both channels now. Look for New Numa Godcast Live as well as New Numa Godcast Audio and subscribe right now because later is too late. Thanks, fam. Peace.
Hello, everyone. My name is Giorgio Impano, and I'm the founder of Global Celebration, and I want to invite you to jump on New Numa Godcast. It's a powerful podcast with Norman Brown. You will love it. Norman is a great host, and I appreciate Norman. Appreciate you, what you're doing. Love you, man.
This is Ken, and you're listening to New Numa Godcast, the urban voice of Christian podcasts, kicking something new every week. Subscribe today.
And you find out that these words were different.
So how would you know, if you're talking about, but how would you know? If you're reading English, you wouldn't know what the Greek should have been there if you're only reading English. So how did you translate that back to Greek?
Right, you translated it back because you still had a Greek. You had a diglot. It's called a diglot, and then you had that in there. But you had to use. You couldn't copy it word for word. You know, you couldn't copy it word for word, and you had to use what. The words that you have from the translation. And so the construction of the sentence, actually, you know what they did at the beginning? They took you to English grammar. They said, we can't teach you Greek grammar until you learn English grammar. And so we went through these different English lessons on identifying adverbs and adjectives and verbs and, you know, and helping verbs and things like that. And you had to do that. And you had to basically break it down. Before they even taught you the Greek. And so you knew which verb was acting upon what was part of the phrase, the prepositional phrase, and we did that for 3 weeks before we even touched the Greek. And so once you did that, it would give you a Greek version of it, you know, and you had on your diglot, and then when you went to translate it, you used your own, because you didn't want to do it. You want to do your own little version. You weren't recreating the Bible, but you were doing the translation off of your notes and off of your understanding and off of your understanding of how to construct sentences. So it was an academic exercise, but it came out to be a really good challenging thing because you have to explain and defend why you translated that way. And so, and then you had people challenging you. Well, why did you use it that way? And why did you do it that way? And so each scripture, each section, you had to challenge it. And people were challenging you, you know, and critiquing you. And so, and that's how the classes went, you know, and help you get through. So it was iron sharpening iron.
Well, I'll tell you like this, man. I'm sure at this point you know English grammar better than me because one of the things about me that I will admit is that when it came to me understanding grammar in school, there were certain things I did not understand why I was using them or when they would be used or whatever, such as the colon versus the semicolon. I did not understand that when I was going through high school. It took me going to college.
And the professor said that. Yeah. The seminary professor said that. The seminary professor said that. Y'all don't know English. And you don't know English grammar. So we're going to teach y'all again. Because y'all probably learned this when y'all were kindergarten or first grade or second grade. But y'all forgot it. Y'all don't know it. And that's why it took us 2 weeks to learn it before we got to Greek.
Wow.
Yeah, we have to relearn.
What are you gonna say? Oh, okay.
I said we have to relearn English grammar.
Yeah. So one of the things that I was going to say is that it wasn't until I got to English 101 in college that I finally started to know. I mean, that's when I finally figured out what the colon was for and the semicolon. Mm-hmm. So I was like, wow, all these years I never knew what that was. And I was just like, I didn't know the purpose of them or whatever. I would just be like, all right, well, I know their name. I know they exist. I have no idea why we use them. And that was that. Mm-hmm. So I never really used them. Mm-hmm. But I think when I did use them, most of the time I used them incorrectly. So, you know, I was like, okay. So, yeah, there's still things, though, even to this day, like if I were to be honest with you, I don't remember. And I have not studied in detail since maybe even English 101 or whatever. But, you know, maybe one day I will. Maybe that will make a difference in something that I'm doing now. I don't know. But I think that my understanding of grammar and English has been sufficient enough for me to write and to convey my thoughts in books, because I've written three so far. And, you know, I think that I've been able to do that well enough. But I think that it could be helpful to know certain things. Like my wife, she'll ask me questions, and she's speaking Spanish. So she'll ask me questions about things in English that I don't even know. And I'll be like, I know I studied that, but I have no idea what that is. Or I have no idea how to explain that concept to you. I don't know. So sometimes she'll be explaining concepts to me that I don't know, and she knows it. And I'll be like, oh, well, that's cool, but I didn't know that. So she'll be like, well, the past participle is blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, cool. Well, I don't remember that, but okay, that's good. And so I know for me, I probably have to go through a class again to be able to know English grammar on that depth of it, you know what I'm saying, once again. So that's why even for me, sometimes, if I were to be honest with you, that's why I sometimes start to feel like maybe I should do a course in Greek so I can learn like middle voice and all those other kind of things, because I know there's different types of voices in the Greek language and whatnot. I do know that the middle voice comes from within the person. I do know that. But I don't know about all the other things. And so there's certain things that I don't understand like that yet, that I haven't gone to that depth of it. But I know words, like, for instance, like anapausa or whatever, something like that. And excuse me, if I remember correctly, that was something about a pausing of something in a person, if I remember correctly. I might be wrong, but
you're a great self-studier. You know, you study on your own, and you can learn a lot when you're on. I noticed it about you. You know, so I mean, if you want, I mean, a great book is by Daniel Wallace. It's called Greek Grammar: Beyond the Basics, and it takes you through. Takes you through everything you would need to know, so you would learn it and you can learn it on your own. It's called Greek Grammar: Beyond the Basics by Daniel Wallace. He's a Greek professor, one of the top Greek professors in New Testament circles. He's a professor at Dallas Theological Seminary. He does a lot of with the archaeological studies and things of that nature, and finding the old scriptures and translating it. And you know, he's got to touch a lot of the, you know, a lot of the antique scriptures and things of that. So, Daniel Wallace, big plug out for him. Greek Grammar: Beyond the Basics. If you ever wanted to study it, and it's friendly. It's very fresh.
That's good, man. I want to tell you something. This is really relevant to what we're talking about right now. You said something about generations, how God is interested in generations. So there's a question I'm going to ask you after I tell you something real quick. So I've been doing research on my family. I've been interested in my DNA, all these kinds of things for years. I've been interested in this since I was a little kid. And, you know, over the years I would hear stories and get a little here and there about, you know, our background and whatnot, but I never ever got into the depths of what I'm finding out, what I've been finding out over the last 15 or more years. And so I have I found out some information about people in my family on my father's side that was very interesting. So one of the things that I found out is that I had a great-great-grandfather who was, he did a lot of things in ministry. First of all, he was a pastor. He was also a, he was a president of a college called Wiley College, I think it was called. And I think he was a president of a college called Fisk University or something like that. And then he was a professor of Greek at one of these schools, too. He was a professor of Greek, and he was a dean at Morgan State for like 17 years, something like that. And so this man did a lot when it came to academics. And then I found out he had a son that also kind of almost took the torch and ran with it in the ministry as well. His son was named after him. The great-great-grandfather was John Haywood. That was his name, John Haywood. His son was John Haywood Jr. And John Haywood Jr. went on to be a minister as well. But he was also, now, check this out, bro. This is going to go back to something you said earlier that I wanted you to kind of pick back up on. He actually was a speaker on race relations in America. He was doing it at some kind of conference or whatever in Washington, D.C. He was a speaker, like a, he was a conference speaker, basically. Some type of, you know, I mean, I guess that's the best word I could use for it. So he was known to speak on things dealing with race relations in America. And he was written about in the Washington Post. That's the kind of level of attention he was getting and what he was doing. And so even his father was written about in a paper as well. They did an article on him as well. So my point is this, man, like the first thing that really stood out to me about that situation when I found out that he dealt with race relations is that's what the Lord had in my spirit for years. Like I started to tap into that part of me in 1998. And, but it was not until I started a podcast that I really was able to be vocal, be a voice to that situation. But when I was doing this, I had no idea about my family's background. I had no knowledge of it. But this goes in line with what you said earlier when you were talking about God being interested in generations and how certain things are, you know, they go through the generations, they go through the bloodline and whatnot, but then there's also the thing about relationships as well. And I just found it to be really interesting that way before I knew anything about that part of my family, God already showed me I was called into the ministry. God also showed me that I was to deal with race relationships. That was just one of the several things that God showed me about myself. But it just goes in line with what's been in my family. I got another. Matter of fact, I think that same great uncle, I think he wrote a book. But I know that his sister wrote books. His sister was an author. And she was a teacher. And both of them were teachers, by the way. He was a teacher. She was a teacher. Their father was a professor. You know what I'm saying? Then I know that my great grandfather, he was an engineer. I think he went to school for mechanical engineering. And so I got all these smart people in my family, and also people that have done some really significant amazing things, but it's like it passed right down to me. It was in my tree. It was in my family tree and in my bloodline. And here I am, kind of like the culmination of those things. And so back to what you were saying earlier about, you know, God being interested in the generations, what would you say that when, what else, what is in your family background that is kind of like in line with what you're doing? Or are you like an Amos who the Bible says, I was no prophet, nor the son of a prophet?
Wow, because I'm, you know, I'm, you're just right there with me in the spirit, okay? You're right there with me in the spirit. My grandfather was a book guy, studied the Bible, and he went to Howard, and he studied the Bible, and he was a religion, he got his degree in religious studies at Howard. And so, but he did, he didn't do anything with it, but he that's what he studied at Howard University. And so, my dad always talks about, you know, that I'm in the same strain as my grandfather. And so that is where I believe God has called me because of what my grandfather, William Cooper was doing, you know. But I was saying that we're on lockstep because I, you know, two books of the Bible really come to my mind because, you know, the writers of the New Testament assume, because he's talking, they're writing to newly converted Jewish people, to the follower of Christ, the follower of the Christian way, as they call it, the way at that time, you know. So they assume that you knew the prophets and the Torah. All right, and so a lot of the things that they say in the New Testament has an assumption that you know the prophets in the Torah. Two of the things that we are dealing with in this day and age, you know, of the books, the prophets, are the book of Amos and the book of Haggai. All right, one is Haggai is the prophet of restoration, and Amos is the prophet of social injustice, and that's where we are. And, you know, you got to know what times you're in, all right? And that is going to be how we get through this. When the church starts teaching through Haggai and Amos to the people through any form of medium, those are the books and those are the prophets that's going to help us through this time. They were contemporaries at that time, and so they were going through the same thing at the same time. Different parts of the kingdom of the north and south of the kingdom of Israel and Judah. And so we have to know what Haggai is saying about restoration and what Amos is saying about social injustice. We can't avoid it because it is in the air, it is in the culture, it is in the world, not just our state or our country. It's in the world. Social injustice. If you want to reach the today's youth, they are very, very in tune with what is social justice. All right, and they can really detect injustice. It's about that. We were a group about truth. What's true and what's not true. They're about what's right and what's wrong. It's a difference. And so we have to restore that. Knowing Haggai and knowing the book of Amos is going to be essential to get us through this generational thing.
Wow, man, that's amazing. I like the way you broke that down. That's a quotable, by the way. I'm gonna put that quote out there.
Yeah. So, sir. Yes. It's good.
So it's interesting how I remember when I first read Amos and got that out of there, the revelation out of that. And, you know, one thing that I don't know if I ever told you this back then, but back when you and I first met, that was when I was in an 8-year season of intense study of the Bible. It was 8 years of that. And I literally started studying the Bible like never before. Like, I used to study the Bible when I was a kid, but I didn't know how to. Well, first of all, let me say it this way. My grandmother bought me my concordance when I was 17. So that was 1989. That's when I got my first concordance. So I never knew about concordances, or maybe I probably heard mm-hmm. of them, but I never used them prior to that time. Mm-hmm. I didn't have one. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't able to get into the depths of study at that time until I got a concordance. But the funny thing about it is I didn't really start using that concordance until 5 years later. So when I went to the military, I didn't study the Bible at all, just to be honest. I didn't study. I was not really. That was when I was backslidden, like I said. And I was still aware enough of God that I wasn't getting too crazy, but I was not really I wasn't seeking God. I was just, at that time, all I was doing was asking God to forgive me at the end of the night, and then I'll go to sleep. That would be what I was doing.
Right, that was because your conscience was not seared yet.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So once
your conscience gets seared, you can do whatever, without any restraint.
Yeah, exactly. So I was in that season. But then when I came out of the Navy, and I think I might have told this story a little bit on here before, but for you, I'll tell you the story because I don't think I ever told you this. But when I came out of the Navy in 95, I had a brief stint. The Lord had dealt with me before I came out of the Navy, and he was showing me that I needed to come back to him. And so I was, I was going through this thing where I was like, you know, I want to, but I'm not able to do it now because I like what I'm doing. I'm enjoying myself. So, but anyway, when I came to a point where the Lord dealt with my heart again, and then I finally realized as he was speaking to me that I needed to get my life on track. After I did that, man, like, I started to go into a season where I was devouring the Word. And that was the time when you met me. That's when I started to devour the Word. And that was because I had been on such a drought for 4 years, almost 5 years of my life, that it was like a man being in the oasis that he found in the middle of a desert. It was like that. So I was just drinking it all up, man, just trying to get as much as possible. You know, I was diving in it, swimming in it, drinking it, all that. You know what I'm saying? It was like, I'm going to get as much as I can out of this. So, but one of the things, so that 8 years of time was where I probably would say I got the majority of what I know from the Bible, that 8 years. And the ironic thing is, I was always interested in the book of Revelation since I was a kid. It was a big deal to me to understand the book of Revelation. I don't know why I was feeling that way back then. I think it was because of the mystery of it, so to speak, and I like mysteries and I like getting into deeper things. That was probably what was drawing me to it. So I just like I said, I was going through the season of studying the Bible, and I remember, now, I'm not sure if it happened during that particular time. It may have, but I remember coming across Amos and seeing where it said, I was no prophet, nor the son of a prophet. That scripture stayed seared into my conscience to show me sometimes God does start something new in a family bloodline. And it'll be something that was not there before, but it started. And, you know, and so that was something that stood out to me. And I believe, based on what I've found out about my family history, that my great-great-grandfather was one of those people who something new was started in his generation, because he was born right after slavery ended. So he was born in 1880, and slavery ended in 1865. So 15 years later is when he was born. So he was not born into slavery, but I know that probably had something to do with why he took the path that he took. And think about it. I mean, if his generation, I mean, there was kids obviously born before him, but essentially his parents were born into slavery, and then they were freed up, and they were pretty young when they were freed up. So they, you know, I don't know, they probably started to see that they could do certain things, and maybe that's when they had kids, maybe they told their kids, all right, y'all can do this now because you're not a slave. And maybe that's why it pushed them to go do something, you know, significant. Because I'm doing research now on my family, and it seems to be leading to the fact that maybe another one of my relatives did something really significant. And if it's who I think it is, that would be my great-great-grandfather's brother. I'm not sure yet, so I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to put it out there yet. But I will say that, well, let me say it this way. It seems as though one of his brothers founded a hospital, but I don't know for sure because the records are kind of confusing me right now. And I'm still trying to make sure I track it back the right way. But it seems like one of his brothers might have started a hospital somewhere. So I'm just going to leave it at that for now. But the point is that I believe that part of the reason why these things were happening, like I said, and that generation specifically, is because they were no longer enslaved, so they didn't have to be a farm laborer like their parents. They could do something different. So he went the route of academia, and he really blew it away. This man had three doctorate degrees.
Mm-hmm.
He had a D.D., a L.D., or L.L.D., or whatever they call that, and some other D.
Mm-hmm.
All these things, doctorates, three different.
He had the whole alphabet behind his name.
Exactly, man. So I was like, wow. I was blown away by him. He really, really impressed me, man. I know he was highly intelligent. He knew Greek because he was a professor of it. He taught Greek. So these are the kind of things that, you know, and that's part of the reason why, to be honest, I was thinking about maybe I should take a Greek class, because if he knew Greek like that, then maybe I should study and just kind of follow that part of his footsteps as well, you know, to get deeper into it. So, but
yeah, I just know for me that, you know, that this new thing is something that my grandfather dabbled with it. He dabbled with it, but he never did anything. He got the book, but he never did the application. And so, you know, it's a new thing. It's I feel as though that, you know, I'm the Amos, you know, because I took the book and also now apply it, you know. And so for my generation, you know, and I see it, you know, also transpiring in my brother, you know, and I see it transpiring in my nephews. And so, you know, God is using, you know, I wasn't a prophet, and I wasn't the son of a prophet, but God is using me to speak to the people on his behalf.
I like that. So, all right, let's switch gears a little bit. So now, I wanted to get into what recently happened now almost a year ago. I remember last year when I was, when you and the family came to Baltimore in the summertime, and I remember being in the pool, and, you know, I remember Caroline saying stuff like, I don't know exactly her wording, but it was something like, man, now you ain't going to be able to get Myron out of Norma's face because, you know, they always be hanging out with each other. It was something like that, she said. I don't remember. Do you remember exactly what you said or no?
Yeah. I mean, it was like that because she knew that once we was together, you know, it was through. I think we went a couple places to get something to eat and, you know, we were just hanging out and just reminiscing, you know. And so she knew it. Yeah. She knew that when we got together, you know, I'm going to really kindle our little thing, you know. And so she understood it. She just knew. Yeah, and she was okay with it. That's, you know, that's his recharge. That's his partner. That's his homie. Let's go. Go ahead. Do it. Go ahead. You know, because I know that it's essential. Iron sharpening iron.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, and at that time when you guys were here, there was no indication. I mean, there was nothing going on that I know of at that moment where she, I don't know when she contracted the coronavirus, but at that time there was no evidence of it. So you know, obviously it was just, to me, it was just a normal gathering like we always would do periodically when y'all would come. And so
I think it was the summer before COVID.
No, it wasn't. No, it was last year. I remember very well because when y'all came, it was shortly after that I heard about her having COVID. And I was like, what? She had COVID?
Right. Yeah, you're right.
And so,
you're right.
So then I really was like thrown off by that. I was like, dang, we just saw them. And then, you know, I was thinking to myself, okay, well, you know, she'll be fine. Like, in my mind, I was like, she'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be praying for her, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so then when I started hearing about it was getting worse and whatnot, I was like, what? What's going on? Like, don't the doctors know what to do? I mean, they've been dealing with this long enough. What's going on? Mm-hmm. And so it was like, it was really starting to concern me. And then I remember the faith that, you know, you had, and obviously that I was in agreement and I was praying with you and for you and whatnot for her and all those things. And it seems as though, like, at one point in time, it was almost as if God was like, okay, I'm going to give you this brief moment to be able to say, okay, yes, your prayers were working. But then it was as if, and I could be wrong because I don't, obviously, we would never really know until we get to heaven or we see her again. But it was as if she decided to stay with him. And, you know, be, you know, with the Lord. And no matter what we were praying about, you know what I'm saying? And so people, we never really know what could be happening between them and the Lord in a moment like that. And, you know, there was a part of me that felt the same way about my father when he passed away. I just was like, you know, I prayed for him and whatnot, but I was like, you know, he must have decided that it's better for him to stay with the Lord. He doesn't even want to come back. So, but anyway, in that time frame, bro, kind of walk us through that, in a way.
Well, yeah, I mean, just the fact that having that diagnosis of having COVID, you know. And so we thought at that time, you know, she's going to get over it. You know, we had just celebrated our 23rd wedding anniversary, you know, and also our daughter's sixth birthday because she was born on our anniversary. youngest. And so, but we did it through, you know, from a distance, because I was about to go into, you know, for an operation, and I needed to get this operation on my foot and didn't want to, you know, contract it as well. Her and my second youngest daughter, she also contracted it. She went through the quarantine, and, you know, 4 days later, Nicole recovered, and it was good to go. But Carolyn did not. She did not recover. You know, and so, you know, she would do her own little quarantine and try to get herself together and try to do some walking in the room and everything. I slept in another room. And then she finally said, you know, came to me on the 29th of August and said, 2 o'clock in the morning, said, Myron, I go to the hospital. I need to go to the hospital. I can't do it anymore here. And so I took her to the hospital right down the road. And in the emergency room, they admitted her. And, you know, at that time, you can't go back with them. And so we blew kisses at each other. And she walked behind the door, and that was the last physical contact I had with her in a conscious sense on August 29th. Went back home. We communicated later on, and then I found out that they moved her. And, they, you know, I thought I was going to go the afternoon and pick her back up after they gave her medicine and bring her, send her back home. They had moved her to the inpatient, to the hospital. At another, at the other location. And so I had to go there and make sure everything was good to go. She said, it's fine, you know. And we would just communicate. I let the girls know. And, you know, of course, my oldest was like, Dad, get her out. Don't let her stay, you know. And, you know, no, we need to put her in the hospital. It's the best place for her, all right? That 2 weeks later, there was an issue with the in Texas, and they had we had a power outage. The power went out in the hospital, and in that subsequently in that time, you know, the machine that was helping her breathe, you know, basically was not on. She went into a cardiac arrest, and she went into a coma and on the ventilator. She fought for 44 days, strong, fought for 44 days. Yeah, until God called her home. I know the last moment, you know, of her life, you know, I was able to, you know, be there with her and be in the room with her as they worked on her, you know, talking with my daughters online through the FaceTime and saying, hey, you know, it just looks like this hurting your mom, you know. What do we want to do? And they were like, Dad, do not let them stop. They keep working, you know. And so I granted them until finally, you know, God went around them and unplugged the plugged up machine and let her come home. So I got there. I had a little bottle of anointing oil, and you know, anointed her head, her chest, and her feet. You know, as she had gone on to be with the Lord, and I prayed for her. You know, and I prayed loud, and I prayed with strength. No, you know, trepidation in my voice or anything like that. And the people were astounded, you know. And my friend of mine, he's like, man, this is the holiest thing I've ever seen. He said, I've never seen this before. And I felt like I was on holy ground, you know. And so I just had to pray for her and pray with her and anoint her body like they did to Christ. And I told him, I said, clean her body up, clean her up. Because I want the girls to see her and say goodbye, because the girls want to see her. I said, but clean her up. They cleaned her up, called people in, and they were able to say bye to the shell that had the spirit of my wife, that the spirit of my wife had lived in. I also believe that God had called her home earlier. But we were keeping a shell alive. But needless to say, you know, it was a devastating thing for us, a shocking thing for us, because we expected her to recover. Subsequently, this time has been, you know, moving forward, and we're doing a lot better. And we're able to make and mark moments of things she did and things she did said, and without it being so emotional that we couldn't get through it, you know. And we're doing it where, hey, mom did this, and mom said that, or, you know, or what have you, you know. And I can see it in each one of my daughters and what they're doing and how they conduct themselves, and I see their mom in them, how they conduct themselves, how they deal with issues, you know, good, bad, and different. I see my wife in them, you know, and God has equipped me to help them to go to the next level. And it's only been God. It's only been God that has been helping me move forward, remembering her, and even just seeing that her legacy goes forward. And the girls are forever grateful for what their mom did and how she was with them.
I know that obviously that was a big hit to the family, and not just physically in the sense of relationships and whatnot, but also financially. I know that it affected everything. And but I know that God has been provided for you, man. You want to speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, an amazing thing. The ministry allowed me to take a sabbatical. They continue to give me basically the finances to provide for my family. The church, which is amazing, the church family, my friends, family, have also been able to make a connection with, you know, giving and helping, you know, and help me settle things down and do a new budget, a new way of living. You know, things aren't, you know, like they used to be. We have to do things a little bit different. But, you know, God has given me the wisdom to know how to do some things that normally, to be honest, she did. She orchestrated, she managed the home. And I just was, you know, I was there. But she managed everything. I had to discover things. I had to find out things. I had to do things that I hadn't done in the 23 years that we were married, you know. And so I had to do it because, you know, there was no one else. But I was able to manage all that and learn it rather quickly, helping my daughters, helping some friends. You know, help with the Holy Spirit to, you know, to help me through those things. But it's been different, and not alone difficult. But as you go through this moment, you know, that Psalm 23 moment, that valley moment, you know, you have to realize. Remember, I'm always looking things through the concept of the scriptures. You got to know Psalm 22 and Psalm 24. As well as Psalm 23, because Psalm 23 is the valley moment, but Psalm 22 and Psalm 24 are mountaintop moments. And so between two mountains, there's always a valley. And so I know that through this, we're going to Psalm 24. And so as God takes us through Psalm 23, we're going to get back to Psalm 24, and we're going to get to that mountaintop. And so you have to look through the lens of always the scriptures. Psalm 23 valley moments are in between Psalm 22 and Psalm 24 mountain moments.
I like that, man. Wow. That is another one of those nuggets you just dropped on me. And now I'm going to go back and study them.
The geography, of the writers had that in mind.
That he was writing, I like that, man.
That 22, 23, 24, they go together.
Yeah. Yeah, man, I know that during that time when it was still pretty fresh, thank God I was able to come and visit with you and the girls. And be able to,
thank you,
support
That miniature presence was perfect for me. I needed it.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I know that.
For you to come up and uproot yourself and come be with my family and just, you know, make sure I wasn't in that pit, that valley alone. You walked through a portion of that valley with me, you know.
Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah,
I really love you for that. I'll never forget that.
Yeah, no doubt, man. I mean, there's moments, and this is a life lesson for those that are listening. There's moments when you have friends that you got to show up. It is essential that you show up for them. Those are the moments that are going to stand out in their mind the most out of everything else you've done. Those moments will be the thing that's like, obviously there's things that sometimes make situations impossible or whatever, but when there's a moment that you can show up for a friend and be there with them through a tough time or whatever the situation may be, those are the moments that matter to them more than anything else in life. And this is one of those things that I knew when you told me you needed me there. I was like, I just heard it. I heard it in your heart. I heard it in the spirit, and I just knew I got to get whatever I got to get in order, in line or whatever, and I got to go meet with my brother. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, man, that was definitely a moment. And I was thankful that I even had the finances to do so. That was another part about it that made me happy, that I had the money to actually go and spend that time with you, man. But I know that moving forward, that God has some great things in store for you and whatnot. I wanted to if you want to let people know how they can get in touch with you or whatever, maybe even bless you financially as you're still kind of dealing with the after effects of those things. And also how they can connect with your ministries, things that you're doing. Why don't you share that information with them now, if you will?
Okay, yeah. You can find me on Instagram at Coop_Myron. That's one way. One of the things I'm also doing in with my ministry through email. mcooper@chaplain.org. And also, I mean, if God would, you know, lean it in, on your heart, Cash App is $CMCOOP11, CMCOOP11. That is my tag on Cash App. So those are the ways that we're doing. And also, I'm with Corporate Chaplains of America. I serve in the Houston area, so you can always look under the Corporate Chaplains of America, go through in the directory, and you can find me there. And that has my extension and those numbers as well. All right. I can be reached directly on my chaplain link at 1-877-322-CHAT or 2427. I'm at extension 4250. That's 1-877-322-CHAP 2427, extension 4250.
All right, bro. Well, it was good having you on the podcast and having you share your story, man. And I'm looking forward to the next one.
Thanks for having me.
By the way, all of you who are listening, yeah, all of you who are listening, make sure you stay tuned because he and I are going to be doing another podcast where we're talking about something that comes out of the book of the Song of Solomon, and it's going to be powerful. Mm-hmm. So make sure you stay tuned for that one. That's coming soon. So thank you again for being on a podcast with me, bro. I appreciate it. As you know, you're listening to Norman Brown, the host of the show, also known as Norm the Professor. Look me up on IG at Norm the Professor, on Twitter, Norm the Professor, on Facebook, Norman Brown Author. Find me also on LinkedIn as well. Matter of fact, also follow the podcast at New Numa on all social platforms. And make sure you subscribe if you haven't already subscribed to the podcast. Give us a 5-star rating if you like what you're hearing, and make sure you follow that with a very powerful, inspirational comment as well about why people should listen to the podcast. We also have a YouTube channel. Make sure you subscribe there as well. And in the future, we're going to be doing more YouTube stuff where it'll be actual videos showing me talking to people in interviews or even about the things that we're going to be talking about. So just be tuned to that as well. Thank you again for listening to the New Numa Godcast. Peace.
God bless everyone. All right. God bless you all.
Thanks for listening to the New Numa Godcast once again. This is your host, Norm. Follow me at Norm the Professor on IG. I'm in agreement for power and breakthrough in your life. Keep tuning in every week for that real talk, new life.